I was going to be just riding the tiger. I have nothing in particular to talk about today. Just going to hit the super thanks and the super chats. And I was going to talk about how miserable it is following politics in current year. But at the last minute, Trapper goes by the Englishman outside, who sends me DMs and things sometimes on Twitter. He's been very on top of this situation with electricity cutouts in Spain. And indeed now there's electricity cutouts in this country. So we're going to talk about that and a bit of net zero stuff and why this actually should be near the top of our agendas at the minute, because it seems like the globalists just want to kind of end life as we know it by pursuing this insane strategy. But just before we get going, I will just remind everyone, do buy courses at the Academic Agency, Trivium, Foundations of Shakespeare. I'm going to chill out a little bit, smoking today it's a Ramon Alonez Small Club Corona. And yes, Englishman, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thanks. How about yourselves?
It's good. It's a lovely spring day here. I'd rather be outside than talking about politics, but here we are. I realize you don't have a huge amount of time, so we might as well just get straight into it.
We can do.
So in Portugal, correct me if I'm wrong, they basically had a blackout, like a nationwide blackout over the past 24 hours where they just lost electricity.
Yes.
And similar things may be happening in this country too.
Basically, just a quick cut in. Basically, what happened, the entirety of the Iberian Peninsula and the south of France went into a blackout. And to very, very quickly explain what happened, basically, their entire grid is very much, it's Spain's fault, effectively. Their entire grid is almost completely reliant upon new renewable energies. And because of how reliant they are on renewable energies, they don't have a component to the grid which is referred to as grid inertia. And it's basically what grid inertia is. So it used to be that your grid was powered by giant steam turbines and that was it. We're starting introducing things like solar panels and wind turbines. And we've been slowly moving away from having what is effectively massive flywheels running all of the time to ensure that the grid stays at the right frequency. So as these have been getting phased out in Spain, what's happened is the grid has basically had a load of solar energy dumped onto it with no grid inertia to back it up. And it has meant that the grid has changed frequency. It's lost frequency, which causes an enormous amount of cascade problems, whereby basically when you start to lose frequency, your other power plants have to turn off to protect themselves from basically getting damaged by the grid, because it creates a feedback loop. So what's happened is they dumped a load of energy in the middle of the day and it knocked the entirety of the Spanish grid out. And because all of our grids are now interconnected by enormous interconnectors that run between different countries, so we have quite a few with France and the rest of Europe as well, like I think Norway and Denmark, two others. But basically, Spain's electrical grid got knocked out, and because the Portuguese are reliant on Spanish energy, they also got knocked out at the same time, because the cascade ran through from the Spanish grid into the Portuguese grid and completely wiped them out as well. And again, it then continued on into the south of France, and if it hadn't stopped at the south of France, you're potentially looking at the entirety of the European grid getting knocked out. So it really is wild.
Yeah, now correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't it true that France has nuclear energy and is meant to be more resilient than the rest of Europe? But what you're saying is that because it's all interconnected, essentially, like French nuclear power would have had to then be stretched more widely than France going to Spain, and there's just not enough to go around. Is that basically right?
Yes, almost exactly. Spain itself actually has nuclear power. And what happened with the nuclear power in Spain was they had to disconnect from the grid because it poses a risk to the security of the nuclear plant. And then once they disconnect, they then have to turn off the entire nuclear plant because you can't have a plant that's just generating within a tiny closed loop. It needs to turn off so that it can be turned back on once the grid gets turned around, which again is a monumental task. And this was all being done on the clock because you've got all of the substations based around the country and you've got electrical processes going on that require power. And if those processes stop, you then need to physically go to every single substation to turn them back on again, effectively, which becomes a bit of a nightmare because as your electrical power goes down, you lose communications, you lose your telecoms, you lose
So
everything.
you're hoping that the dude who's in charge of that charges mobile phone the night before and you can get hold of him, basically.
To some degree, but it gets even more complicated than that because you're hoping that the telephone masts and the communication masts that your phone uses still have power. Because if they have no power, you have no way to contact them.
And I'm just imagining now an insane scenario where, okay, let's pretend you can get in touch with that guy. But because the government has decided that all state employees need to use electric vehicles, he can't get there anyway because he can't charge his car.
Yeah, exactly. You
Is
can
that
get you can
basically
get
a
stuff like
possibility?
that. Yeah, you could have a scenario like that actually play out. And on top of that, as you've discussed before, you've discussed taking away people's mobile phones to make Trumpton. This would basically be nature saying, "I'm taking away your phones and you're having Trumpton."
Amazing. I wonder if the Portuguese and the Spanish, after having tasted 24 hours without phones or internet or lights or anything, are like, actually, we kind of like this. I talked to my neighbor for the first time ever, you know. I
Yeah.
put out a video earlier on today about isolation in the modern world and so on. But maybe like people will be like, oh, we kind of like this.
Yeah.
I can imagine that has not happened though.
Somehow I don't think that all of the neighbors will be quite as friendly. But yeah, the specific process actually which caused the grid to shut down is a process called islanding. It's whereby when the grid starts to go funny, all of your power stations basically it's like I say, it's referred to as island themselves. They cut themselves off from the grid and then just turn themselves off because that's the only thing that they can do. And then they have to wait and try and coordinate to turn everything back on without power potentially, which if it's off for too long, it might not come back.
Now, there's a guy in the chat who said AA is rabidly anti-EV while simultaneously not understanding the difference between energy and power with a little roll-eye face. What does that mean? I'm guessing you will know what that means, even if I don't.
I'm not entirely sure what they're talking about because it's a case of, your power's power. You pull it
I mean,
through, it doesn't matter how it's generated, doesn't matter where it comes from. If the power stations go, that's it. Your EV's going to last a little while, but once the battery goes out, just like your phone, that's it, it's done.
Going on my old GCSE physics, you can't create energy. You can only transfer it from one form to the other, right?
Yes, exactly.
If you and again, going on with GCSE physics here, your old fossil fuels, you basically put coal or oil or whatever it happens to be into a thing, and it uses up that fuel and converts the energy from that fuel into stuff to motor your car or whatever. Whereas in renewable energy, you're taking it from wind or solar, or in the case of a car, you're basically charging up a battery using the grid. I mean, am I wrong?
That's exactly how it works, and it's incredibly inefficient because the storage potential of a battery is never going to be as easy to replicate as fossil fuels. Because just being able to just, like you say, take your car to the petrol station, dump a load of fuel into it, and that's it. It's done. Whereas with your electric cars, you've got to leave them sit there for potentially, you know, an hour or two. And it's just the rate at which the energy can be converted.
I've got a neighbour who's got an EV, and he's basically there every night in the, in the garage next to mine, charging up this car.
Yeah.
You know, for hours upon hours every single night. Seems like a nightmare.
And they make it out like these are wonderful, environmentally friendly things, but if you've ever seen a battery factory, you know that's a load of bollocks. It's just not even remotely environmentally friendly.
I mean, when I watched that neighbour of mine charging up his car, though, all I can think is, what, he's taken that from the main power grid. He's basically taken it from the same plug that you'd use to plug your phone in or anything else in, which means it must be taking energy from the national power grid in the first place.
Yep, exactly. Right? There was a brilliant one over in America where they were doing a electric car demonstration, and there was a representative from the local power plant there, and it was a coal-powered power plant. So they were asking this person in charge of the power plant, so are you saying this is a coal-powered car? And it's like, yeah, effectively.
Well, this guy in the chat is insisting I still don't understand the difference between power and energy, but look, I'm very low on BS, and all I know is you can't create energy, and the way they currently do it is inefficient, and you're not actually saving any energy by having it in a battery form as opposed to using petrol. The reason for that being is that the energy it takes to make that battery and continuously charge that battery ends up taking more power overall than your petrol car will generate petrol. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, that's pretty much exactly it. It's just purely a trade-off of efficiency, and it is much less efficient to just burn fossil fuels than it is to burn fossil fuels in a power plant and then stick it in your car.
But, I mean, my understanding, same is true of solar, because it's not just the sun going into those solar panels. It's the manufacture of the actual solar panels themselves and all of the supply chain and process that it takes to, you know, make those and transport them there. Same with those massive windmills they're putting up everywhere. They're not particularly environmentally friendly because, again, of the massive resources it takes just to get them up and running in the first place. And then they're not actually that efficient in terms of their energy conversion from, you know, the wind to electricity or from the sun to electricity. So, you know, tell me how this is wrong.
Yeah, no, you're spot on with your analysis there. It is basically a case of just, they're just sort of fudging the numbers at this point, really, just in order to make it look like it is better than it is. And it's, to some degree, I've always referred to it as a game of hide the carbon. Because for your solar panels, they're generally manufactured in China. And the way that they manufacture them is they burn several tons of coal to make them, because that's how they get the silicon for them.
I mean, one of the things I learned recently through the Trump tariffs and so on was that rare earth minerals processing is all done in China because it's very, very environmentally unfriendly. That is, it creates a lot of slurry and so on and so forth. But my understanding is that China is also massively involved in manufacturing car batteries, manufacturing all of the parts for these so-called renewable energies, but it does so in an environmentally unfriendly way. So the total damage you're doing actually is possibly more than all of those petrol cars that were running, you know, up until recently.
Yeah, exactly. It's all just the case of they've just moved whatever carbon would have been created here, or let's say created, whatever carbon would have been released into the atmosphere here, they've just moved it to China. And that's all they've done. They've just moved it around, and it really doesn't matter where it's done. The only reason why I think that they prefer it to be done in China is because, like you say, there is certain processes there that are genuinely dirty for the local environment, and they can cause quite a bit of health concerns and problems. Because I think there was recently actually a fire in a battery factory in Scotland, I think it was. And you can see the smoke just pouring out of these things. And it's the same for if you actually get into a car accident in an electric car and manage to set the battery on fire, it takes several hours to put out. The firemen actually can't put it out. They just leave it there to burn effectively because there's nothing that can do. It's a self-sustaining fire and it's very difficult to get water onto it and cool it down enough to the point where it will actually come out. But if you do it before a set point, you actually are several times worse than the lifespan of a car in terms of the emissions. It's got to reach a certain mileage for it to actually become effectively considered carbon neutral or green, if you prefer.
So just come back to Portugal and Spain. Are the lights back on?
I think the lights are coming back on in Spain at the minute. I'm not certain whether the lights are back on in Portugal because it's a bit more complicated for Portugal because Portugal is kind of in a similar position to Ireland, whereby if the UK were to lose power, Ireland would also lose power because they're relying on our energy grid to prop up their energy grid in the same way that if the continent were to go offline, we would probably go offline because we're relying on the French for their nuclear energy and the Nordic countries as well because they burn oil and gas, which is basically ours, and we pay them to do this, which is rather frustrating. But
now, do they tier it so that because the energy is coming from Spain, the electricity goes to Spain first and then the spillover effectively is Portugal's energy grid? Or are they like more equitable, or do they make sure actually, no, we're going to do Spain first because it's our energy and anything left over goes to you, Portugal? Is that how they do it? Or
there's a set of complicated trade agreements based on the interconnectors and how they function. And basically it's a case of if you'll have sort of pre-arranged agreements with them whereby the Portuguese will agree to buy a certain amount of Spanish energy. Therefore, Spain will overproduce a certain amount of energy and sell it off to the Portuguese, which works fine when the grid's working. However, as soon as it stops working, you can collapse both energy grids by accident.
But like in this eventuality, because now it's gone down.
Yeah.
Do the Spanish say, no, it's first dibs is on us? Or do the Portuguese say, look, no, you signed the deal. You owe us this amount of energy. And because you're the supplier, we have to have the energy first. How does it work?
I imagine it will be that the Spanish will be first served on the grounds that it's kind of the same as all of the rest of the infrastructure within the Spanish energy grid. Everything will have been shut off, so even the interconnectors will have been shut off. So it would require them to contact the people that were running the interconnectors to tell them, turn them back on again so the Portuguese can have power. So I imagine it'll be down to the Spanish government whether Portugal gets power again or not, effectively.
Now, one thing I know about the Iberian Peninsula is that since the glory days of Franco and Salazar, since basically the 70s, both of those countries have gone pretty socialist, so to speak. How much of this is down to decisions made? I mean, I've called the stream now. What's behind the blackout in Spain and Portugal? Is it basically stupid net zero decisions made by the governments of Spain and Portugal?
In my humble opinion, yeah, pretty much. There's no two ways around it. They've become over-reliant on a means of generating power that basically doesn't have that backup there to keep everything in line, because the backup that keeps everything in line is those giant turbines spinning. And you're talking about like several thousand tons of metal continually spinning at all times in order to ensure that the frequency of the electricity generated remains correct. And what happened was they had a load of solar came online, dumped into the grid, which massively unstabilized the grid. It caused frequency to go absolutely haywire. And then, like I say, everything then starts shutting off and you then have the cascade problem whereby, so your thing that's keeping everything stable and in line, one of them's just gone offline, things become more unstable, another goes offline, and that just keeps happening until everything's turned off.
So just to understand it, in this case, there was a surge created by the sun.
I don't know whether it was the sun specifically, and I don't think that they're 100% certain whether it was the sun specifically or whether it was just a case of a solar farm coming online and saying, yeah, we're going to give you the energy that we've been producing now, and we're going to turn on the solar farm and dump it into the grid. So it could just be a case of, it might not even be the sun. It might literally just be the grid itself and the way that it is set up caused the accident to happen effectively.
So human mismanagement, essentially.
Yes.
Just in the interest of being like playing devil's advocate a little bit, why wouldn't that happen if you were bringing a coal or a nuclear power station online, like, surely the same thing could happen, right?
It doesn't happen with a coal or a nuclear station coming online, because the way that nuclear and steam turbines generate power is much more stable than how solar and wind generate power, because solar and wind generate power at an intermittent frequency. And the way that they dump power into the grid basically is evened out by the giant spinning masses. So you're basically introducing another stabilizing element when you bring in a regular traditional power plant setup.
Just from my understanding, again, my lay non-technical understanding, when you say dump power into the grid, I mean, what, we're just talking like amounts of electricity, literally just be like, right, this farm has generated this much electricity, we're going to release it and let it go into the grid now. Like, how does that work?
Effectively, pretty much just as described there, almost. It's just a case of they flick a switch and the power, much like you do with your light switch at home, you flick a switch and then it just goes into the system. The power runs through it. It's almost kind of that simple to some degree. And it's just a case of what happened was there'll have been a solar farm that was generating electricity but wasn't linked to the grid yet because it hadn't flicked the switch. They flicked the switch and it just blew the entire fuse, effectively. It blew all of the fuses across the system.
Wow. And can they be flicked back on, or do they have to be replaced?
They can be flipped back on if it's within... It's a bit of a funny one. They can be flicked back on, but it depends to some degree, because the reason why the fuses blow is to protect all of the equipment. But if the blow in certain ways, you can end up where you damage some of the equipment, and it depends on how long it's left offline. So if they don't get power for a certain amount of time, it then does become a case of you sometimes have to replace certain components to bring things back online, which is why they were running against the clock to try to get the grid back online. Purely because they were worried that they might try to bring everything back online and it might not come back online.
Now, in our DM exchanges, you mentioned that this may be happening in this country as well. And in some obscure way, it's related to what I was discussing last week with David Betts and the whole Civil War narrative. What is the connection there?
There's been an article released earlier, I think it was by the Telegraph, which was discussing the fact that there was similar fluctuations within our power grid an hour or two before they happened over in Spain. But ours, they're not quite as certain about what the cause would have been, because it was related to a traditional steam power plant that had the problem. And it's a bit of a funny one, that steam power plant, because there's people discussing the idea that it might be a cyber attack. But from the fact that it's a plant that was built in the 1940s and 50s, there's not that much digital there for you to actually attack from the outside. And it's the same for all of our nuclear plants. You can't actually run a cyber attack on any of our grid infrastructure, really. It's quite difficult because it's not connected to the intranet. It's an infranet. It's all internal. You can't just hack into a power plant from the outside and say, oh, there you go, I've turned off your power, because it's literally basically a self-sealed unit, and it's an air gap system. But this is where it gets a bit complicated, because you've then got people throwing out the question of, oh, was this a Russian cyber attack on our grid? Is that why we're having problems? But it's almost as if that idea has been planted by this David Betts guy that's been going around giving interviews saying, oh yeah, we're going to have attacks on the grid and that sort of thing. It's a bit funny, because it feels to me much more like a maintenance problem rather than it being directly attacked by opposing forces.
So one of my biggest questions here is that, to me, it seems obvious that the powers that be cannot do all of the things they're promising at the same time, and that major headaches that would be solved for everybody, especially in this country, but in all of those European countries too, is if they ditch, if one, Ed Miliband is fired immediately, okay, and two, they just ditch all this net zero guff. Why don't they do it? Like, why do they stick to these things that are clearly, absolutely clearly inefficient and causing us to fall behind places like Asia, China, and America?
I'm honestly not quite sure how they're playing or what game they're playing exactly, because it feels to me like if you were to do what's just happened in Spain, if that were to last longer than a week, they wouldn't be able to get the power back on, at which point they're no longer ruling. It's over. The country's just balkanized. You have no means to control the Spanish people at that point because you've got no way to talk to them. And it genuinely does just, it feels like insanity to me. It feels like someone has declared that traditional means of generating power is somehow an affront to their god, therefore it must all end. And it's as if they've not thought far enough ahead to realise, oh yeah, but we promised that we were going to bring all this digital ID stuff. We can't have that if we don't have any power. It doesn't work.
Yeah, but this is what I mean. Like, all of their plans rely on the power grid working.
Yeah.
And also getting everybody online, getting everything online. You know, the digital ID, the AI. They want everything to be electronic, right? To be part of, the worldwide interwebs, as it was once known. But of course, if the actual grid fails, they can't do any of it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, in one way, it's kind of exciting because you could get a kind of Mad Max scenario where everything just fails. And you have whole countries like Spain and Portugal reverting to like medieval technology in the space of 48 hours. But like, I mean, surely this is going to be a wake-up call, isn't it?
You'd like to think so. If we were dealing with sane people, this would be a very, very obvious wake-up call. I'm genuinely amazed that Tony Blair hasn't just basically descended from on high to say, Ed, you're out, it's over. You're done. I want my digital ID more than I want this green nonsense. Get to the curb. But I thought it would happen by now. I'm amazed that they've been allowed to continue on like this for so long, because they really need to get the finger out and start building more traditional power plants. Otherwise, they're going to go down the same route as Spain, and that's going to become more and more common until eventually, like I say, the grid will just fall apart and just not come on again.
The thing is, though, correct me if I'm wrong, it takes like a decade to build one power station, doesn't it?
Roughly about that. They are trying to speed things up with certain programs along the lines of SMR, which if they can get SMR to work and if they can get it up and running, it should make building power plants quite a lot faster. But it's the initial input of trying to get that up and off the ground, and it seems like everything at the minute just drags on forever.
Like, can the Chinese knock up a power station in a shorter amount of time?
Yes, they can. Part of the reason why they can is because I don't think they have anywhere near as many regulations as we do, but we love our regulations. So the chances of us bringing things in line with China and turning around that quickly, I'm not really sure how that would go.
So what you're saying is that we have more regulations than communist China?
Yeah, probably in terms of building regulations. They get away with things we don't.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I was hopeful a couple of weeks back that the Dark Lord would have Ed Miliband fired, but he's still there. And they're still, like, I even saw Mark Carney, first thing he said when he won the election was, we're going to make net zero work. So they're not letting this go, are they?
No, they don't seem to be. It's an insane one, because it feels like it's going to drag them into an early grave if they don't let it go. It's literally they've decided, rather than rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, they're going to jump off the boat with the deck chairs and hope that they float by some divine act of their god, whoever they may be.
Well. This guy called Shaw Moffat said he wanted to come in. So you need to send me your actual email, mate. I haven't got your email. If you send it to me, I can send you the email and you can come in. Lots of people are complaining that you're hitting your mic, Englishman. Or that you sound like you're sitting on a bag of crisps, as what another person has said. But I still haven't seen your email. If you send me the email, I can bring you in, because he also says he has some expertise. It is here.
Fair.
Or where is it?
I'm curious to see what their expertise will be, because I have, and I'm not some plebeian, I have actual expertise in this field. Namely, I've seen the inside of Kedby. and I know what it looks like. In fact, actually, I'll give you a story for Kedby. 2 years ago, they managed to flood the reactor hall of Kedby. They flooded the entire reactor hall and the sub-basement of Kedby power plant, and it took it offline for a good couple of months.
Yeah, I'm just having a look now for this guy's email, but I can't see the email. Unless he's emailed me himself. No. I don't see it. I don't see the email, unfortunately. All right. Anything else? Any other aspect of this that we can talk about before I hit the super thanks and super chat, etc. I mean, other than hoping that our governments will come to their senses and drop all of this, are events like this Portugal and Spain thing going to become more common? And can we expect to see a return to 1970s style brownouts? They were always called brownouts when I was growing up. The differences between a brownout and a black 3 day week, because, you know, oh, it's not windy in Spain today, or there's been a cloud has come in Aragon or something, you know.
I think the call them brownout because it they like to feel they have a bit more control over that. They say, no, look, the power may go off, and we've told you about it, therefore you know. But I think part of the complication is the 1970s was bad enough with the power going out. You know, you could still sort of get by in the 1970s and you still had that community around you. Whereas now the power goes out and you can't go to work, you can't do anything. Nothing works. Everything stops working because there's just so much is digital in the modern age. I mean, like, think about it. You can't even go to the shops and buy a pack of crisps because your card's not working. It's the till itself isn't working because that's also electronic.
See, this is the thing where it's like the government, this is what I said earlier on about the possibility. I know that governments are signing orders left, right and center saying like, oh, all of our fleet needs to be electronic. That, everything needs to be, all of the buses need to be electronic vehicles, etc. So a blackout now or a brownout now is not just some small event. It's going to basically put the entire economy on halt. Almost COVID style, right? It's going to basically put a halt to everything, and that could cost billions upon billions of dollars. I mean, I don't know what the total cost has been to Spain and Portugal, but it must be astronomical.
Yeah, it'll be huge. And what's been funny is that the markets don't seem to have reacted to it, but it'll be huge. It'll be even bigger than COVID, because COVID was just, you're locked in your house, you can't go anywhere. Whereas if you have the grid collapse, you're not locked in your house, there is no government to tell you where to go, and you just don't have any power. You can't see what's happening. You can only see what's happening directly around you. And that's where it ends. And if that goes on for too long, you're getting into the end of bread and circuses territory there, at which point, like I said, everything just balkanizes because there is no one to tell you who's in charge or what's happening. Unless the government has like a secret room hidden in the Houses of Parliament full of old town criers that they're going to release should we experience blackouts, I don't think there's going to be a lot they can do about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just one of those scenarios, I suppose. But it's been the thing that boggles my mind is that all of this is chosen, and at every stage of the way, it could have been foreseen. There's been people practically our entire lives saying, no, this is madness, this doesn't work. And yet they plow on regardless.
Yeah, it is just genuinely feels like madness. But the light at the end of the tunnel is that Trumpton may come to be yet.
That's the thing, though. Are we going to want Trumpton imposed by a mess up by liberal governments? I don't know. Maybe some good things will come of it. People will get to, you know, there'll be opportunities to make a blackout business where you're essentially a medieval baker again. That's per my Carlisle video earlier on, you know. Well, you see, people are saying, stop asking why, we know why they're doing it. I honestly don't know why they're doing it, because if failure on the level that we're talking about comes about, that's their control mechanism gone.
Yeah.
The grid is their control, so...
It makes no sense at all. They're literally entirely reliant on the existence of that for all of their managerial systems. And it just, if there's no more power, there's no more managerial elite, they're just gone. Overnight, it's literally, what's the book? I have no mouth and I must scream. That's their life, if the grid goes.
Yeah, I mean, I generally don't like answers that say, oh, well, it's a Russian conspiracy or it's a Chinese conspiracy.
No.
But in this particular case, I could believe it because as far as I can see, they are the major beneficiaries of this.
It could potentially be, but the complication comes in that I've seen the competence drop as well. So it could just be that they're trying to make things more and more complicated, almost as if, you know, throwing things at the wall to see what will stick, to say, well, we'll build these things because they don't require as much maintenance and we don't have to look after them as much. Certainly for solar panels, they just stick them out in a field and it's like, yeah, there we go, we've got power, we're sorted, that sort of thing. And they've not really thought beyond to the maintenance of them, almost. It literally feels like someone grasping at straws trying to stay afloat.
Sometimes I wonder if them ploughing ahead with this is some sort of weird long-term strategy, right? Because every once in a while, somebody will post a stat saying, like, well, do you know how much coal there is still left in Britain? Absolutely shit tons of it, you know? What if they're just doing it to preserve stocks for some future day? And then when the rest of the world isn't least expecting it, aha, the coal mines are back open. Or would that be attributing, a level of forward planning that nobody has?
Yeah, that feels a bit like 4D chess, because that's the elite playing 4D chess, and they don't play 4D chess, as we know.
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to, like, any part of it makes sense. And that's the only one that makes any sense to me. They could even fumble into it, like ass backwards, you know. They stumbled into a viable strategy. Anyway, cheers for that. I know you said you had to go, but I thought it was worth talking about this. So, cheers for coming on, and I'll hit super thanks and super chat and get out of here, goblin raid style. So.
Cheers for having me on.
Cheers, mate. Thanks. Cheers. All right. So that was interesting. I originally had called this stream What It's Like to Ride a Tiger in 2025. I don't really have much to talk about today or indeed this week. And in fact, I've been feeling less and less interested in the news in general in recent times. And so for my videos, I've gone back to basics. I did one on Carlisle earlier today, and I'm going to do one on Evola tomorrow. And even if these don't get the kind of slop traffic of the latest greatest thing, some of those videos are quite good because they accumulate views over time. You know, anybody wants to know about Carlisle or Evola, or maybe they'll come upon those videos, and that will be a way into the back catalogue. So every once in a while, especially in quieter news weeks like this, I like to take a step back. Also, frankly, the current environment is not very good for, you know, discussing politics in, because everybody's partisan and insane in this day and age. And as you know, I'm all about being sensible and centered here on this channel. But I'm kind of focusing more on my spiritual nourishment and things like that. At the moment, played my pickleball last night and so on. So at the moment, I'm just going to focus on things like that, because I like the slop, as people know, and I never want to feel like I'm just kind of following the news cycle all the time. Just before we here, I will mention that a big course, and right and playing the Blair playbook, and Super Trump. But it was a lot. Carney was a lock, especially as the Poliver, whatever his name is an absolute joke. Nobody respects him. Pathetic candidate, really. I'm not surprised. He's even lost his own seat. But the reason I'm not talking about that today is because looking down, as my Canadian correspondent, he's going to be breaking down what's happened in Canada. All right, so let us go. What am I going to do with video magic? Hold on, where have I gone? Why are all the Fs? Why all the Fs? Oh no! Oh bloody hell! How much of that did you get? How much of that did you get, friends? Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, I was just saying that Black Horse is going to do the video on Friday, on Thursday, as my Canadian correspondent. Then I noticed someone saying, when are you going to do a video on magic? Probably not. I think that is a field which has got its own kind of space on YouTube. You don't need me to, tell you how to make a pentagram or whatever. I'll leave that to the experts. I will hit the super thanks and the super chats now. Hopefully we'll get out of here really, really soon. Let us hit, first of all, the super thanks. I think over the coming weeks, I'm going to do a few more back to basics videos, like that Carlisle one. I've got an Evola one tomorrow. I might do one on Schmidt. I might just do a few back to basics, because it's been a few years since I covered a lot of that material and a lot of new people are around. And increasingly, I just find like people just don't know basic stuff. People don't know, I'll mention something and they're like, well, who's that? What's that? I was like, but then you realize, oh, we covered all of, we as a community covered a lot of that stuff 4 or 5 years ago in some cases. Not everybody's read Prophets of Doom or Populist Illusion. So, every once in a while you have to refresh on the ABCs. So I'm making a few videos like that. Tomorrow, on reviewing Adam Curtis, I've got Morgoth coming in, and we're gonna try a 4-man panel, right? Because it's about horrible social housing that they built in the 1960s, and we've got Morgoth, Simon Roberts, Horace, and me on social housing in the 60s and 70s, brutalist architecture. Should be really good. So I know some of the places that are covered in the Curtis documentary. We're actually a few miles away from where Morgoth grew up, so he actually knows, it's set in the northeast, so he knows the area as well. So that should be really interesting. Always great to have Morgoth in. I always see Morgoth as a guest, like it's like bringing in the Undertaker or something to pop a house, Andre the Giant or someone. Like he's a special attraction type guest when he comes in. So that's always exciting. But anyway, let me hit these super thanks. I thought I had them. Where have they gone again? Oh, here we are. Okay, so super thanks. Going back to last week. So this was on what, Tony Blair? I think I did that one. This one here. So Begbie says, I was thinking the same about as one of your final points. The need for digital ID is far more persuasive thanks to the arrival of myriad third worlders. It seems like a tinfoil hat conspiracy to believe this was all planned. But if we need a place to start the start of deliberate mass immigration with Blair in 97, then ID cards as an inevitable consequence by 2030. What at first appears to be an implausibly long time for a master plan, when zoomed out and viewed from the perspective of historical political phases, is not so crazy. If we accept this premise, what else can we expect from Blair, Ellison and Co. by 2030? Yeah, I mean, I am, having studied Blair and having kind of focused on this stuff for some years now, I am more inclined to believe that Blair brought in the immigration, came to see it was a disaster, and then has been kind of like trying to write it ever since. Not that he is ideologically opposed to immigration as a basic idea, but like he always maintains that when he opened the gates, he just didn't know how many people would come. Like he still maintains that to this day. And my understanding is that in the first Blair ministry in 97, so from about 1997 to 2001, Blair didn't really know what he was doing. So he kind of learnt on the job, and he kind of got more kind of, he learnt the dark arts, as it were, on the job. But by 2001, 2002 sort of time, he was much more keen to stamp his own mark on what happened. And if you have a look at New Labour as a project, all of the left wings, all of the very, very left wing stuff they did was front loaded. It happened in 97, 98. All that stuff with rubbing their noses in diversity and all of that, it all happened early. And Blair progressively shifted to the right from the start of New Labour to when he went out in 2007. Then, to complicate matters, Gordon Brown was always to the left of Blair and to the left of the Labour Party, to the left of New Labour, right? If you think about New Labour as a project to pull Labour from a left-wing party into being a centrist party, Blair was always on the right of that, and Brown was on the left of it, closer to old Labour, okay? So when Brown came in 2007, he then did a pile of stuff that you could say pushed the party further to the left, like the Equality Act, for example, in 2010 was a Gordon Brown thing. However, viewed from today, Gordon Brown did do a lot of stuff that people would think, oh, that sounds like a Tory policy. Like, for example, he made people coming in do British citizenship tests, and he wanted to make sure that everybody had a requisite amount of knowledge of the history of Britain and things like this. And if you ever saw Gordon Brown's British citizenship test, I actually knew some people who had to do it. It wasn't easy. It was quite a difficult test. And the Tories, the liberalized, they took a lot of those frameworks the New Labour took away. Right. I know a lot of people think that I am an apologist for Labour. Right. But this is true. Labour brought in the hostile environment. You had David Blunkett, threatening to machine gun the prisons. Right. I'm not even making this up. You can go and look it up. You had Blair with a like a 90% deportation rate at one point, or a rejection rate of asylum. So during that period, they really did kind of try to course correct within the 10 years of New Labour. But when David Cameron came in, he basically liberalised all of those. You remember Hugger Hoodie and all that bullshit? David Cameron, and then even more so under Theresa May, and even more so under Boris Johnson, they progressively liberalised the immigration system to make it easier than ever for people to get in. Easier than ever for non-EU people to come in, for third worlders to come in. For one of the areas they really made a lot easier was overseas visas, non-EU visas, to study in universities as a student. If you have a look at Boris Wave, about half of it was student visas. Okay, all of those things that the Tories did to basically triple, quadruple the net immigration rate from Blair's time to now, was stuff that the Tories did. And what really irritates me, yes, it's true that Blair opened the gates, and yes, it's true that they did a lot of shit things, New Labour, don't get me wrong. What irritates me, though, is that Tories, Tory apologists, Tory boys, they use that to try to absolve the Tory party of blame. Whereas, if anything, the Tory party, which is to the left of New Labour, they accelerated all of those trends in a way that is not fixable, right? If you take the country as New Labour left it in 2010, it was still salvageable. It was salvageable. Now, they've brought in about 10 million extra people since then. And those are the official numbers. The real numbers are probably double that. I know Scrump and Evelyn have looked at things like load on the power grid, like sewage, you know, areas where you can't actually hide how many people are in the country. And, you know, so the real numbers are probably above the official numbers. The Tories did that. And, you know, you say what you want about Blair. He understood very quickly that this is an issue that needs to be sorted out. And if you ask me, he most Tories on the issue of immigration since about 2002. It was Tony Blair who first said that he wants Britain to pull out of the Geneva Convention when he was the Prime Minister, this was, and to pull out of the European, the Court of Human Rights or whatever. It was him who said that. You know, you can find the tape. It was back in 2005, 2006. So, long story short, I don't think it was one long clandestine plan of Blair's to bring in this control mechanism. Okay. That certainly is his project now. Okay. And if Blair has an issue, in my opinion, is that he thinks that digital ID is like magic. He thinks it's like a magic cure-all solution to everything. Like, he thinks it's gonna solve the NHS problem, it's gonna solve immigration, it's gonna, like, he just uses it as a magic cure-all, and I suspect it's not gonna work as well as he thinks. And if I Chris Blair, is that he's by nature an optimist, right? So he tends not to see the bad sides of things, right? He tends to be too trusting in, you know, these new innovations, and it tends to go wrong, right? Which is a very classic left-wing thing, right? The path to hell is paved with good intentions. And when it comes to him, I genuinely believe that in his heart of hearts, he just doesn't see the downsides where somebody like me or most of you would see the downsides. I mean, he probably gets millions, but that's another issue. So yeah, I don't really think, I mean, just think of how far something like AI has come since 1997, right? I don't think that back then, like, you've got to remember in 1997, I mean, I remember back then, people, like, you'd be on TV and, you know, the news reporter would say, oh, and if you'd like to follow us on the internet, on the information superhighway, you can reach us on www.bbc. I mean, I remember that. Or it was a different world in 1997. So I really don't think that they were thinking along the lines that they are now back then. Although watching some of those Adam Curtis documentaries that me and Simon have covered, they had utopian ideas about what was possible, perhaps, right? But I don't think in their wildest dreams they would have had something like the all-consuming Larry Ellison kind of surveillance grid that they're talking about now. Maximus Aquilus says, I love the Adam Curtis series. Would you guys ever look at James Burke's Connections documentaries? We can certainly consider it, Maximus Aquilius. There's questions to, like, what's going to happen after we run out of Curtis. Are we going to continue? So we'll put those. I mean, what we could do is cover different people at some point. I need to kind of talk to Simon and Horace, really, about where we might go. I mean, it's been suggested we might look at Jonathan Mead stuff. It's been suggested that we might look at a few old, you know, there are like old BBC Kenneth Clark type things. I mean, there's so many different things that we can look at. For me, it's better if they're older, because we've got more chance of not falling foul of copyright, basically, if it's old. if it's been on TV recently, then, you know. So let's carry on. Dan Qua one says, This is a comment he's left on Cigar Stream 116. Three presidents, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin D. Roosevelt, and who was the third president? I don't know, and Richard Nixon. And that was me and I think Thomas 777 back in the day. Me and Thomas 777. Yeah. And what did he say about it? Let's have a look. He said, "I am so glad I pulled the trigger and upped my membership for this one. Curtis Stream is a platinum too." Well, there we go. I mean, there is a lot of gold in the archives. And yeah, I mean, that stream there, me and Thomas 777, looking at those three presidents is definitely one of the ones that people say is one of the better streams of all time that we did. So yeah, there's tons of great cigar streams in the back. It was a good show, let's face it. But you know, but this is why I'm doing these refreshers now, like the Carlisle and the Evola and various other things, because as time goes on, you know, there's a churn of people. Some people go away, they get married, they go off and have kids, that they disappear, right? And new people come along. And those new people who come along, you know, haven't watched all those streams, or they haven't, you know, they weren't with us when we did all that stuff. So they have no clue. When I drop someone like Carlisle into conversation, they have no clue to talk about time. So Studio Trade Wars are a racket. This entire narrative does a great job of hiding how much the traders on both sides of the Atlantic made from this. Remember what Nathan Rothschild did to Britain? Some things never change. One of the amazing things about the so-called trade war that Trump started is that past couple of days marked Trump's 100 days in office. And one of the incredible things is that, do you remember it was all about the trade deficit, right? The trade deficit. This green dot here is the number of imports. This blue dot is the number of US exports. That's when Trump came in. So that was the month before Trump. Trump has come in, and look, the imports coming into America have increased by about $50 million. And the exports have decreased. So he's actually increased the trade deficit. Now, that could be a short-run phenomenon. Why did that happen? Apparently, one of the reasons is that tons of companies just imported a shed load of stuff before the tariffs started. So maybe, you know, that will change in the longer run. But it is quite funny, because it is it is literally the exact opposite of what he promised would happen. Lamac2519 says, "The art of the deal can only work if you're willing to walk away. Everyone knows that the US can't walk away completely." Well, this is the thing. I mean, I don't really want to go back on all of the Trump stuff, because it's very tiresome, and I hate to see Cope. You know, I'm in a pretty good mood. If I see Cope, I'll be put in a bad mood. Okay. I mean, I think I probably banned over 100 people on that one video alone. You know, if you have a look at my subs, there was like, on that one video, it was like minus 100. That was me banning people because I don't want them. And when you ban someone, they cease to be a subscriber. It's kind of funny. I just don't want to see it. The art of the deal doesn't work. And one of the reasons it doesn't work is because it relies on a bluff, right? And you just cannot bluff in international relations with many complex moving parts like that. Just can't bluff. One of the other problems is that there's a lot of bluster and bullshit when it comes to the art of the deal sort of stuff. That might work if you're dealing with an individual company or an individual businessman or someone on the golf course. it can't work when you're dealing with the Chinese embassy or, you know, the embassy of India or something like that. Because when you make a claim, oh, we're in talks, the talks are going really well, and the other party just comes out and says, we are the government of China, we have had no talks whatsoever, there are no records of talks, there are no channels open, we haven't heard anything. You know, then you're like, well, okay, one of these two people is lying. Who is the one lying? It's probably Trump, right? Nine times out of 10, it's probably Trump. Because, and how do we know that? Because he claimed that he had live negotiations with 100 different countries all at the same time. And tons of those countries came out and said, we haven't heard a dicky bird. We haven't heard a thing. And that guy, Daniel Davis, was the first person who was onto this like a whippet right before it even started. He said, look, Doge has just fired a shitload of government employees. In order to do a trade deal with any country requires scores upon scores of diplomats, right? It requires a vast team of people. Who are the people who are going to do these negotiations? So, like, on balance, are these talks happening or are they not happening? Well, one, if they're happening, logistically, how is it happening? Daniel Davis's point. And two, when the countries are coming out and saying, yeah, we haven't heard anything, there aren't any negotiations, yeah, I put two and two together and say, it's likely that the same people who lie about everything else are lying about this too, right? It might work on a MAGATARD. It's not going to work on the rest of the world, okay? And frankly, we'll just leave it there. Redacted Brainwave says, AA, I am not an economist, but this is on what is the real cost of Trump's tariffs from last week. He says, I am not an economist, but won't tariffs also have an impact on money supply inflation? The US dollar is used for global trade. My understanding is that tariffs will reduce the volume of US imports and tip their trade balance towards exports, which means an influx of US dollars back into the US economy and thus more inflation due to more money supply. This can also further incentivize countries that want to trade in other currencies. To be honest, I've never quite understood how exactly that works, because my understanding is that there are basically two separate buckets of dollars, right? There are dollars inside the country, that is the dollars within the US economy, and then there are the dollars outside the US economy, okay? Now, here's the thing, that there is a mechanism of getting it from point A to point B. And the mechanism has to go through various different financial institutions. I would be very surprised if there were not some controls in there, right? Whether from the Fed or from investment banks or whoever it is that facilitates these transactions as they go through, basically to safeguard against mass money dumping one way or the other, right? Because otherwise the countries of the world could get together and be like, right, we're gonna massively devalue the dollar by dumping shitloads of dollars into the real US economy. I'd be really surprised if there's not a safeguard in there that stops that happening. But the money men in the chat, the financiers, the bankers, the Black Hawk horses and Dans of this world, will if they're around, they can correct me if I'm wrong. But I'd be really surprised if that was just left up to the quote-unquote free market, because there's just too much scope to go wrong, right? And at the end of the day, the government needs to have some control of the money supply, right? Albim80 has sent $50 on an old video called Tap In to a Happier You with 60 Proven Maxims, which was the daily shorts I was doing. Do you remember I did all those shorts smoking a cigar? Put together in one big video with 60 of them all together. And he's just commented on that, said, just an appreciation for these valuable tips, especially don't evangelize, people will come motto. Help me solve the deep personal problem. Especially grateful, eternally grateful, and looking to more content. Well, I'm glad people got something out of those shorts. I will start making them again. I've been really busy past couple of months. not just busy with this work, but Easter holidays and, you know, various family members in and out of hospital and so on. So it's been like a lot of strain on my time recently. I haven't had a chance to record more shorts, but I will. Now the sun is out again. You know, the weather is good to record more shorts. And I've got a pile of stuff that I can share. There was also a second tranche of shorts. I don't know if there were 60 of them, but there are quite a few shorts I did after that. So maybe one of the things I'll do is edit together a second collection, just for the, as a reward for your $50, Alib 80, right? I will put together a second compilation of those shorts. The ones where I was wearing that hat and so on, those ones, if anybody watched those, and I will, I'll make those available. Maybe that can be next Tuesday's video, something like that. And then I will endeavor to record more shorts. The thing is with shorts, I have to set up outside. I have to make sure nobody's around, because otherwise it looks a bit funny. Like, who's this weirdo with a laptop smoking a cigar, talking into a laptop? You know? But I will. I'll endeavor to do that in the next week or so. And then we can have the daily shorts again, because people did like them. And they're a little bit different. They're a little bit more, how can I say, like personal life advice type stuff, which are suited, I think, to the 60-second format. And there's a ton of stuff I want to talk about in that realm at the moment as well. Not just spiritual, but also just kind of, again, ways to live a better life and be more contented within yourself, let's just say. Studio Rayner says, the internet initially released for financial services, the internet initially released for financial services poses a significant risk to the digital economy. The Fed, tasked with maintaining, this was Office Hours, progressive liberals have zero answers to the populist narrative, okay, from ages ago. He says, the Fed, tasked with maintaining the dollar's value, saw an opportunity to expand financial services globally during Clinton's administration, freeing the internet from regulations. However, the tech elites push for CBDC, while their companies face cybercrime and bank bailouts, complicates matters. If the Fed deems online banking too risky, it could lead to a global tech sector collapse. The US has reported $1 trillion in cybercrime this year, with yearly estimates showing substantial increases. Globally, losses exceed $20 trillion. I predict the Fed will crash the economy within 10 years to protect the currency. Do you agree and bet against this hypothesis? I do not think the Fed will deliberately crash the economy. The Fed wouldn't even release cheap credit for Donald Trump in the past couple of months. I don't think the Fed are going to deliberately crash the economy. I also don't think that crypto is this kind of unregulated Wild West thing anymore. They have brought in regulations. People like the tech bros being into crypto has brought it more into the mainstream. Financial services now are openly putting crypto as part of their asset balance sheets. There are centralized digital currencies coming online. So I don't believe that crypto is this big libertarian dream. I think that it takes time for capital P power to regulate stuff, right? And so the trajectory of all things is that initially it comes in Wild West, and it just takes time for the government or the governments of the world to put regulatory frameworks around it. That is happening to the internet, and that is happening to digital currency as well. And probably eventually you'll be forced to have digital currency, if I had to guess. Because I mean, years ago, I wrote this thing called Dystopian Fiction, written in 2019. I wrote it in an airport. If you get the complete works of Maxwell House, or the collected works of Maxwell House, whatever it was called, still available on Amazon, I believe, an obscure book, you can find that Dystopian Fiction, and you'll see within that the dystopian managerial potential for digital currency and why actually I think it's inevitable for crypto to become more centralized rather than more decentralized. User Earn says, will reviewing Adam Curtis cover Trauma Zone? Yes, that was a comment on yesterday's Uncovering the Mysterious Russian Mindset, which was the latest chapter in The Character of Peoples by Andre Siegfried. Our current plan is to cover Trauma Zone. Whether we will actually be able to do so remains to be seen, because my attempt of watching it alone did not end well. I couldn't make it through myself. Okay. Let's carry on. I cannot promise that I will not be wearing shorts in the upcoming shorts, because it's pretty hot at the moment, right? It's pretty hot. So therefore, I may well be wearing shorts, but you don't see me. You don't see my trousers. You don't see what I'm wearing in my trousers in the shorts, do you? Because you just see my head, possibly a cigar, and possibly a hat if I'm wearing a hat or a cap or whatever. Okay. Well, what's hot in the UK? I mean, what's the temperature right now? It's hot. It's hot right now. Temperature. It's 22 degrees right now, and I consider that hot. It's quite muggy. In fact, I need to open the door. It's quite hot in here. Okay, a pile of super chats from Studio Rainer coming up, which I will cover in a second. And also a smattering from some other people as well. Let me hit the... Right, I'm going to do the Studio Rainer ones first, and then I'm going to do everyone else. Okay, so Studio Rainer says, you should change your channel name to Academic Merchant. It fits better than Agent. I wouldn't say that. I mean, as an example, I sell merch, right? I do have a merch store. How many times have you heard me shill that merch? Do I ever shill that merch? Right? If I was truly a merchant, I'd be shilling that merch like crazy every single day. But I don't. I don't shill that merch. I encourage people to level up their knowledge and skills by doing the trivium and so on. But I very rarely push my actual merch. You know, you can get an AA sweatshirt and a mug and a t-shirt. And I never mention this stuff. I probably should mention it. I'm probably leaving whole handfuls of money on the table. So, but I'm not going to be changing my name to Academic Merchant, I'm afraid. Studio Rainer says the Russians did it. Well, I've seen some evidence to say that the Russians did push the green agenda in the West. He also says, why does nobody in Europe that there is a hard to me that the era of immigration has come to an end? Because basically, it is the position of every government, including left-leaning governments, liberal governments all across Europe, that they need to deport more rather than import more. So I consider the immigration era actually to be over, but it actually needs to translate into results, because at the moment, all those people are still here. And of course, many of them do need to leave. Reina says, Spain was defying Trump's tariffs, as I recall. All of the Ukrainians in Europe is Zelensky's leverage. That's why Macron is owned by Zelensky. I don't know if this, I don't know if the blackout situation was related to the wider geopolitics, right? There's no evidence of that yet. He also says the EU didn't blame Russia. They have blamed Russia for the Baltic energy issue, and this is a good opportunity for a false flag. The cause must have been very bad for the EU not to blame Russia. Yeah, well, it just sounds like it was a massive fuck up, basically, on behalf of the Spanish energy companies or the Spanish electricity grid. He also says the power grid was built by merchants like yourself. Do you know how profitable? I mean, you can keep on calling me a merchant, but I'm not. I am not a merchant. I really am not a merchant. Do you know how profitable rebuilding the grid is? Planned obsolescence? I mean, if that's the case, I mean, I would say the power grid in many places is aging. It has been aging for quite a long time. So, I mean, I'm guessing it needs maintenance and probably, you know, different parts need replacing all the time. But the actual infrastructure is aging everywhere. He also says, if the EU abandons Ukraine, then the SBU will attack Europe. There's millions of them in Europe. This is why Zelensky has leverage. Civil war to disguise. I mean, I don't. I would say that is wildly speculative, Studio Arena. I am not convinced that Zelensky, quote unquote, has leverage. I think probably the relationship is the other way around, and Zelensky is a stooge for his masters in the West. That would be my take. Adonai says, but have you ever been to the Northeast? Studio Arena says, make a course on how to replicate your black pill business model. Share your formula. This niche is very clever, but you're too old to market it right. Well, I mean, I don't have a black pill business model. I simply just tell the truth, regardless of what, right? And time, wisdom, and experience have taught me that democracy never actually gives people what they want. Almost never. Right? If to you that is a black pill, so be it. But I never go out of my way to push black pills. And I have had many, many times in the history of this channel where I have been optimistic, and I have been, whether cautiously or otherwise, optimistic at various developments. But every time I have been optimistic about various developments, it only takes a short time for reality basically to show me that I was foolish ever to trust what are effectively controlled opposition in many, many cases. I do have some controversial views, like I believe the liberal establishment, as represented by someone like Mark Carney or even Keir Starmer here, is much more likely to actually deliver some of the solutions to the issues that people have than absolute grifters like Nigel Farage, for example, or that Poilievre guy. And like, I reckon any quote unquote right wing party that is allowed into politics is provably controlled. It provably does not have your interests at heart. They literally exist as a form of hatred towards you, right? So that is why I have the view that, let's say everybody justifies voting for those parties. Oh, well, the alternative is worse. The alternative is worse. They always say that. I disagree. I'd say Labour is bad. But the alternative, the Tories, is worse. And I say that in pretty much every case. The alternative is worse. Because the alternative is built on lies. It's just built on lies. Whereas when one of these kind of centre-left parties, makes a pledge to, I don't know, let's take something that Starmer's done. When he said, all right, I'm going to cut funding for all of these different NHS departments, he just went and bloody did it. He had no reason to lie because he's pissing off his own base. This is my view. I know many people disagree, but many people, don't forget, people love delusions. They're a comfort blanket. And what I do on this channel, in a way, is try to take away that comfort blanket and encourage you to stare reality as it is in the face. If I was really a great merchant of black pilling, white pilling, whatever, I would have gone a very different way, right? I would tell people what they want to hear. And basically nobody wants to hear what I just said. Nobody does. Labour people don't want to hear it. right-wingers don't want to hear it, right? It's unpopular. It's like literally an unpopular message. So that is not actually particularly good at like maximizing clicks and revenue, is it? Studio Arena. So Ken Noraha says, I consulted internationally on cybersecurity. In my experience, I mean, if I was really all in on making buck, I would have just gone all in on Magaslop and just been like, oh, this is fucking amazing. What's happening? Oh, look how brilliant Trump is. I'd gone all in on anti-Starmer slop, right? I'd have gone all in on all sorts of different things. I just go wherever I think the truth is. Ken Nohara says, I've consulted internationally on cybersecurity. In my experience, it is entirely reliant on engineers from foreign countries. Due to regulations, I haven't had a chance to work with the EU. Interesting, Ken. Interesting. Russ Miller Skippelstein says, long-time subscriber, first-time super chat. Oh, well, never too late, Russ. He says, I rarely watch live, but mainly because I'm a tight-ass northerner. Loving Curtis, missing you, oh. Get Dion Mead stream, on a Jonathan Mead stream. The thing is that D lives in the States now, and due to my schedule, I have to do stuff in the morning and in the daytime, and he's still in bed, and he does a lot of his stuff when it's like 3 a.m. So we have a big time difference, you know. Studio Rainer says, I think Europe, that was under the Iron Curtain, will be fine. But I'm not sure about France specifically. Macron's past is mental. Macron was a banker, wasn't he? He was a banker with literally the Rothschilds, as far as I'm aware. So there we are. All right. So I think that is it in terms of the super chats. Good, because I didn't want the stream to be too long today. I'll be back tomorrow with in the morning there's going to be the Evola video, which is called How Evola Can Help You Face Modernity. That will be in the morning, and then at lunchtime, 12 p.m. We've got Morgoth on for the Reviewing Adam Curtis, which is looking at horrible high-rise flats of a brutalist nature built in the 1960s, and I'm looking forward to that one a lot. Here is Studio Rainer again. He says, why not offer a real in-person course? I sincerely watch an education from a reliable professor. I see no point going into university. Well, Studio Rainer, first of all, you have to make up your mind whether you see me as a reliable professor or as a merchant. You know, or whether you see me as someone to learn from, or see me as someone who has a black pill business model. I mean, are you like several different people sitting there? Like, are you schizophrenic or something? Like, you have to decide which version of me it is, first of all, you know? I will see everybody tomorrow. Pick up a course at the academic agency and enjoy the sunny weather if you're here in Blighty. Bye, everyone.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.